Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
Hello again, John Jeffers here, your founder, host, and executive producer here at the Contra Radio Network, coming to you live with my show, The Jeffers Brief. Welcome all. I'm glad you're here, especially those of you on KYAH. I want to say thank you again. I appreciate it. And what? I have an audience? Do I? Or do I? I do. Yes, thank you. All right. Before we get started, I have to go with my usual plea. I have to beg for $2 a month. That's what I'm asking, $2 a month. If you're listening to a show, you like it. If you like Contra Radio Network, $2 a month. I'm actually asking you for the cost of a cup of coffee for the month, $2. Now, if you want to give more, that's cool. That'd be appreciated. Love you for it. But come on, $2 a month? That's what I'm asking for here. $2! Just go to podbean.com, look up Contra Radio Network. You'll see the Patreon. Click the button. It's $2 a month. That's what I'm asking for. Many of you have been listening to this show for years, and yet you won't even cough up $2? Really? Oh, you're killing me. You're absolutely killing me. All right, I want to get you guys fired up here. I'm going to get you fired up. You're going to hate this, and you're going to want to know why I think we have a two-tier justice system. This is Lou Dobbs talking to Luke Rosiak about his new book, The Obstruction of Justice. Check this out. You guys will just go crazy when you hear it. You really will. All right.
Well, joining me now, Luke Rosiak, investigative reporter at the Daily Caller. Great to have you with us, Luke.
And, good to be with you, Lou.
I'm reading this really fascinating book called Obstruction of Justice, How the Deep State Risks National Security to Protect the Democrats. There it is, written by Luke Rosiak. Congratulations on the new book.
Thank you.
And we want to recommend it to all our viewers here and listeners as well. This is just terrific. To me, it is mind-boggling how little attention the national media would give the issue that you focus on in obstruction of justice.
It really was a surreal experience reporting it out, because here we see every day a collusion in Russia, and it's been 2 years. No one can tell us who colluded with what to do what. And meanwhile, the whole time it turns out that there's this Pakistani guy on the House Network who is taking money from an Iranian government minister tied to Hezbollah. He's sending government devices over to Pakistan, and he's impersonating an intelligence staffer. And so the officials know all of this. They bust the guy, and Nancy Pelosi steps in and deceives the American people, retaliates. They cover the whole thing up very deliberately. And the wool is pulled over the eyes of the American people so that they can trot out this Russian narrative. And it's really blown my mind. I mean, we knew about these problems in the DOJ and the FBI. So we knew how beholden they were to Democrats, but this book shows exactly how they do it.
Where the heck are the brothers? I'm sure they're in prison for a substantial portion of their lives. That Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Democrats are in deep, even tragic apology to the American people. Where are they?
So they were never even charged with the crimes, despite the massive amount of evidence laid out in my book. They hired a Clinton lawyer, and the FBI started working as their defense attorneys. And so my book documents, and this book, by the way, names names. I mean, it talks about people in the DOJ down to the rank and file agents who are doing what as they deliberately rig this case. And so these guys are out free, probably running around in Pakistan with the millions of dollars that they funneled from Congress over to Pakistan.
One of the claims that you make in the book, that Nancy Pelosi framed the House's top internal investigator to cover up the Iran scandal. Why has there been no consequence for that?
And this book was so revealing to me to report this out as far as Pelosi being in charge of the House. I mean, the House Inspector General was originally appointed by Nancy Pelosi. She uncovers the hack by this Pakistani, and Pelosi's operatives falsely accuse her of ethics charges. They actually accuse her of colluding with the foreign government.
You said they falsely accused her?
They have falsely accused the investigator of colluding with a foreign government of Malaysia. It's a bizarre story. And so they drive her out on fake ethics charges. Nancy Pelosi's daughter said a couple weeks ago, I don't know if you remember, this is the kind of woman that will cut your head off and you won't even know you're bleeding. And my book details exactly how Nancy Pelosi is smarter, is more cutthroat, is clever, she lies, she manipulates, and she runs circles around the Republicans. They don't even know what hit them.
Well, Republicans don't know what hit them nearly every time because they're so used to being hit. I mean, look at this nonsense with the FBI sending, 27 vehicles, tactical teams, SWAT teams, after Roger Stone, doing all of the same nonsense against Michael Cohen, for crying out loud, Paul Manafort. It looks like the FBI only pulls these stunts against Republicans and won't even investigate a Democrat.
Absolutely. And in my book about Imran Awan, the Pakistani guy, his own wife, the suspect's own wife, went to the FBI and said, this is a guy who told me he was a mole in Congress and that he knows so much about congressmen that he'll never get in trouble. She went to the FBI and said, he's currently blackmailing me. He's got my house wiretapped. He was blackmailing his wife. And she begged the FBI to do something. And the FBI actually stood in front of this woman's door to make sure she couldn't go to the bogus hearing where they actually made fun of Donald Trump in court and didn't charge this guy with anything. The whole time the FBI is keeping the witness from telling the judge what actually went on.
Luke, we want to congratulate you on the book. The title is Obstruction of Justice, How the Deep State Risks National... I'm going to put you in my a nominee list for longest subtitles. How the Deep State Risks National Security to Protect the Democrats. Obstruction of Justice. Luke, great to see you. We recommend the book to you highly. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Luke.
Well, if that doesn't get you fired up, I don't even know what will, you know? I mean, I'm just thinking to myself, well, that figures. Here we go, two-tier justice system. It's true. Meanwhile, I want to welcome the NSA to another episode of the Jeffers Brief. I know you guys have been listening in since with the days we were on Blog Talk Radio. So that was back in 2014. Yeah, I've been doing this show for 5 years now. 5 years! Bringing you preppy news, patriot stuff, and just issues that just irk me to no end. Not to mention that this whole thing with this fake, I don't want to call it fake, let's call it a coup, a soft coup. And the reason I'm calling it a soft coup is because the military wasn't involved and there aren't tanks on the street. So it was a soft coup to overturn a duly elected president. And yet, the coup conspirators still walk amongst us when they should be breaking big rocks into little rocks at Leavenworth. But that's just my opinion. What do I know, right? Oh, well. Welcome, NSA. Glad you guys are here. Please call in anytime. I'd love to hear from you guys. I got a bunch of questions for you. And I don't care about... Well, yeah, I do. Who killed Kennedy? Because you guys would know. All right. This is from Sundance, coming out of the Big Ugly. They're imploding. The fake news is imploding. It's the sound of sad trombones echoes through the halls of media networks today as a year of speculation surrounding contacts between Don Trump Jr. and the blocked phone records before and after the oft-emphasized Trump Tower meeting ends with Congress identifying two longtime Trump friends and a major nothing burger. Three phone calls, three of them, by Don Jr. to block numbers in June 2016 fueled rampant media speculation that Jr. was coordinating with his father, candidate Trump, over the substance of the Trump Tower meeting before and after it took place. Now, the Senate for Intelligence Vice Chair Mark Warner and the House Chair on Intel, Adam Schiff. You talk about a useless human being. He is definitely just a con man from the word go. He should be sitting in state prison. just for being a con man and a grifter. Both sold a suspicious narrative that candidate Donald Trump and Trump Jr. were organizing, coordinating, and colluding with Russians. Colluding is not a crime. Special Counsel Robert the Mueller and his primary investigative asset, Andrew I've Killed Men in Prison Weissman, fueled the Russian conspiracy speculation, which targeted leaks to allies in the media. However, the truth comes out, and it is boring. And how boring? Yawn boring. So from ABC News, investigators on the Senate Intelligence Committee have learned the identities of three blocked phone calls with Donald Trump Jr. just before and after the now infamous Trump Tower meeting on June 9th, 2016. Three sources familiar with the calls told ABC News. The calls to block numbers, which came on June 6th and after the meeting on June 9th, were between Don Jr.'s cell phone and two family friends. You ready for this? NASCAR CEO Brian France and real estate developer Howard Lorber, according to the sources. Both men have close ties to President Trump and actively supported his campaign during the 2016 election. Really? This is what they come up with. Now, do you think the lapdog mainstream media are really going to report that? They'll mention it for about 20 seconds and move on. You know they will. That's how they work. But wait, there's more. Now, we have another leaked transcript. Bill Priestat, I believe he was the director of counterintelligence for the FBI, I believe. His closed testimony conflicts with James Comey's open testimony. And we are surprised. Why? Why? It's amazing how when you're looking down at a federal indictment, eventually we all hope, how willing you're willing, you know, you're willing to sell out your friends and co-workers to save your own butt. And how bad is it? Well, I'll tell you what. We will listen to it. We will listen to it in Comey's words, why he didn't do what he was supposed to do. But first, let's talk about this. It's another unsourced leak of a congressional hearing transcript to the Epoch Times. Remember, the Epoch Times are big supporters of the Mueller investigation. That's right, I said the mule, not Mueller, the mule. Because, well, you'll figure it out. You're a smart audience. People listen to this show are smart. They can figure that one out. Anyways, the Epoch Times highlights the testimony of former FBI Director of Counterintelligence Bill Priestat. Unfortunately, the transcript is not provided, and there is no explanation as to why the transcript is not provided. However, one quote seems interesting. And the question surrounds why congressional leadership, including the Gang of Eight, were not briefed about the opening of a counterintelligence operation into a presidential campaign. The investigation began on July 31st, 2016. Congress was not notified until early March 2017. Representative Jordan said, I guess what I'm asking Mr. Priestat is who made the decision not to brief Congress in this particular instance? Priestat answers, Mr. Comey. Sold him out right there and there. Sold him out. The answer seems to be directly contradicting the March 20th, 2017 testimony of FBI Director James Comey. Now, I'm going to play you about the first 3 minutes. And I want you to listen for this quote. Because I'm going to turn it off after you hear it. And the quote is, because of the sensitivity of the matter. Now, here, we're going to play this. So you can actually see it, hear it from the horse's mouth yourself. We'll have, it opens up with Dennis, Mr. Nunes, Devin Nunes, recognizing Representative Elise Stefanik about questions, asked questions at the Comey hearing. So go.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. Ms. Stefanik's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Director Comey and Admiral Rogers, for your testimony today. My first set of questions are directed at Director Comey. Broadly, when the FBI has any open counterintelligence investigation, what are the typical protocols or procedures for notifying the DNI, the White House, and senior congressional leadership?
There is a practice of a quarterly briefing on sensitive cases to the chair and ranking of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. And the reason I hesitate is, thanks to feedback we've gotten, we're trying to make it better. And that involves a briefing of the Department of Justice, I believe the DNI, and the some portion of the National Security Council at the White House.
So if that's so quarterly,
to brief them before Congress is briefed.
So it's quarterly for all three, then senior congressional leadership, the White House, and the DNI?
I think that's right. Now, that's by practice, not by rule or by written policy, which is why, thanks to the chair and ranking giving us feedback, we're trying to tweak it in certain ways.
So since in your opening statement you confirmed that there is a counterintelligence investigation currently open, and you also referenced that it started in July, when did you notify the DNI, the White House, or senior congressional leadership?
That's a good question. Congressional leadership, sometime recently, they were briefed on the nature of the investigation in some detail, as I said. Obviously, the Department of Justice has been aware of it all along. The DNI, I don't know what the DNI's knowledge of it was because we didn't have a DNI until Mr. Coates took office and I briefed him his first morning in office.
So just to drill down on this, if the open investigation began in July and the briefing of congressional leadership only occurred recently, why was there no notification prior to the past month?
I think our decision was it was a matter of such sensitivity that we wouldn't include it in the quarterly briefings.
So when you state our decision, is that your decision? Is that usually your decision what gets briefed in those quarterly updates?
No, it's usually the decision of the head of our counterintelligence division.
And just again, to get the detailed on the record, why was the decision made not to brief senior congressional leadership until recently, when the investigation had been open since July, a very serious investigation? Why was that decision made to wait months?
Because of the sensitivity of the matter.
Because of the sensitivity of the matter. So in open testimony, Comey said Congress was not notified upon the advice of the Director of Counterintelligence, Bill Priestap. However, in closed testimony, Bill Priestap says Congress was not notified because of a decision by FBI Director James Comey. You know, is it too much to ask for justice to be served? Instead, you know, we listen to these pompous clowns, 535 of them, on Capitol Hill, who talk and act like they are so important to the American people. And you don't believe me? Listen to when each one of them gets up there and they want to pontificate, and they always say, well, we're doing this on behalf of the American people. Well, how about this to the American people? Knock off the politics and let justice be done. There is a saying I heard from a judge I used to work for, Judge Foos. Really liked the guy a lot. And he once told me, justice delayed is justice denied. Say it together, because it really hits home. Let's say it all together. Justice delayed is justice denied. Why is it so hard? Because we got people's feelings got hurt? Because of an election? Really? Have we become so sensitive? Has part of the country become so sensitive they just can't stand the thought of it? Can't bear the thought? Well, I've got words of wisdom for you out there that are so sensitive you couldn't stand the thought that your precious Hillary lost the election because she ran a crappy campaign. those of us, there are many of us that didn't particularly like Obama, didn't agree with his politics. We survived 8 years. You too will survive 8 years of Trump. 8 years, not four, eight. Yeah. All right. Now, we got coming up here, you know about the Orrs, Bruce and Nellie Orr. Bruce Orr was the guy at the Department of Justice who passed along the Steele dossier from Glenn Simpson at Fusion GPS, whom his wife Nellie worked for and worked on it. Well, guess what? Here's Catherine Herridge talking about the newest revelation from these people. And I'm, you know what? No, not people, snakes. I hate to say it to the snakes, because at least with the snake, you see what you're getting and you see what you're dealing with. But listen to this.
Another Fox News alert now. Some stunning new information about Nellie Orr's work for Fusion GPS. A source telling Fox News, Orr testified last year that she did opposition research on the First Lady, Melania Trump, and all of the Trump children. This just days after we learned that Orr and her husband Bruce, a Justice Department official, met with the author of that anti-Trump dossier in July 2016, contradicting Democratic claims that significant contacts did not occur until after the election. Chief Intelligence Correspondent Catherine Herridge is here from Washington. What we love to get from Catherine is that context to give us some perspective.
Well, thanks, Harrison. Good afternoon. A source familiar with the closed-door testimony confirms to Fox News that Nellie Orr told House investigators that she was tasked with doing opposition research during the 2016 campaign on Melania Trump as well as the president's children. Last October on Capitol Hill, Orr confirmed that the tasking came from Fusion GPS, the same opposition research firm that was paid by the DNC and Clinton campaign for the unverified Trump dossier that was later used to secure a surveillance warrant for a Trump campaign aide. Quote, as I recall, I did some research on all of them, but not into much depth, Orr said. Question. How about Donald Trump Jr.? Did you do more in-depth research on Donald Trump Jr. than some of the others? Or, I'm afraid it was relatively superficial. I looked into some of his travels. Ivanka Trump? I looked into some of her travels. The goal was to see whether they were involved in dealings and transactions with people who had any suspicious past. The congressional testimony also revealed a July 30, 2016 breakfast meeting here in Washington, D.C. at the Mayflower Hotel with Nellie Orr, her husband, Justice Department official Bruce Orr, and former British spy Christopher Steele, who researched the dossier, and one of Steele's business associates. Almost immediately after, Bruce Orr went to senior FBI and Justice Department officials about Steele's dossier work. On Tucker Carlson last night, the ranking Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, who investigated the Orrs and the dossier, said he wants the next attorney general to also investigate.
I think until there's a new AG that gets in there and starts to clean this place up, I think it's going to be tough for the American people to have confidence in what's happening. I agree.
And here's the context. The Orrs really are like the connective tissue in this whole surveillance abuse allegation, that the connective tissue between Fusion GPS, Glenn Simpson, the British spy Christopher Steele, the dossier, and then on the other hand, FBI and senior Justice Department officials. We asked Nellie Orr's attorney if he wanted to provide comment or context for our reporting, but there was no response, Harris.
Oh, that's fascinating. I wrote down that connective tissue that you just laid out. I'm going to discuss that.
It's the pivot point.
All right. Thank you so very much, Catherine Herridge.
Well, there you go. There it is. Now, the thing of it is this. Do you really believe that her work was that superficial? If it's that superficial, then she wasn't doing her job. I don't believe a word of her testimony. Oh, I believe she was looking into it, but she's trying to gloss it over so it doesn't seem like it was that intrusive. I call radishes on that. There is no way that she could stop herself and just kept doing the research investigating. They want to see somebody who had had suspicious relationships. Really? Maybe we should look into you and your husband's suspicious relationships. Unbelievable. I'm going crazy on it. I know. Oh, does it ever end? No, it never ends. You know why it doesn't end? Because the lies continually manifest with the Democrats. They don't end. They just manifest time and time again. You know, heard something very interesting. The last time that the Democrats kept their promise on immigration reform was in 1985 or 86. And here's something else about the Democrats and Miss Nancy. Wasn't she that kept imploring President Trump, just open the government up again and we'll talk about this stuff? So Trump did. He threw an ace on there, opened it up, and guess what? Here we are, a week later or whatever, and already Nancy has refused to talk about the wall. She's talking about some nonsense about about some kind of a Normandy barrier, whatever the hell that means. And then she sold out the DACAs. She did. She sold them out. It's, you know, Trump says, hey, I'm willing to make the deal. Let's make the deal. Nope, she says, I'm not going to do that. So she's thrown some of the people who've been the most vociferous Democrat supporters right off the train, under the bus, out of the car. Or, if you want, off of the short bus, bunch of window lickers. I know. I probably should have said that, but I did. I put it out there. I did. I said it. All right. Dove Fisher. Now, look. We got Kamala Harris coming around screaming about how she wants Medicare for all. Medicare for all people in the United States. Notice she didn't say citizens. She just said all people. Okay. Let's talk about that, shall we? So on January 23rd, 2019, a poll of Americans surveyed by the Kaiser Family Health Foundation. Remember, this is from Dove Fisher at the American Spectator. A large majority of Americans favors by 56 to 42% a public policy extending universal health care to everyone in the country. National Medicare for All, where all Americans would get their insurance from a single government plan. Americans not only are sui generis, but are also so very sweet and generous. People love the plan. We'll eliminate medical insurance premiums. Yay! And reduce out-of-pocket costs. Zowie! And it would guarantee everyone full medical care as a fundamental right. Ding, 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 ding. The problem is this. Nowhere in the Constitution can you say that health care is a right. It just isn't. It's not in there. If it's there, please show it to us. So before popping the champagne cork on our slide to French decadence, let's hear what Americans say when they find out that socialism costs money. And it doesn't just cost the other guy, but costs them too. So when the pollsters asked them about the increased delays in getting medical appointments to see doctors for treatment and in getting diagnostic exams that such a system necessarily will entail, their gleam and glow fade as they lose the Ocasio in their Cortez. When they further are polled about their sentiments over losing Medicare they now have, towards which they paid in part throughout the decades of their labor years, they feel less fuzzy about Uncle Red Boney of Vermont. And when they are asked about the massive increased taxes they'll have to pay to fund the universal health care that makes them feel so warm and fuzzy, they feel less enthused about the Bactrian Kamala's humps. And here are some of the poll results translated into the vernacular so we can all understand it. These are questions to and answers from the sweet and generous. The question is, would you favor or oppose a national Medicare for all plan if you heard that it would guarantee health insurance is a right for all Americans? Yay, 71%. Nope, 27%. Question. And if it eliminates all health insurance premiums and reduces all out-of-pocket costs? You can hear him saying it. Kamala, Kamala, Kamala. And thank you to Willie Brown for setting her up as a political star after she cavorted with you in the media throughout that blatantly open extramarital affair that embarrassed your wife so terribly for so long. 67% like it. Nope, 30%. Here's another question. Which, of course, means eliminating all private insurance. Universal health care means no more private insurance. Send the hyphen to Venezuela, 58%. Big deal, to heck with private insurance. Like, you have to work to get that, right? 37%. Question. Which, of course, will cost you a whole bunch more in taxes. Are you still good? Line up Boyne, Kamala, and the hyphen, and tar and feather them all, 60%. Big deal. Who pays taxes anyways? What do I look like, Romney? 37%. Question. And, of course, threatens the current medical care system as we know it. Make America great again. Trump in 2020, 60%. Who cares about what's it called again? That's the thing for old people, right? 32%. Question. And obviously it will lead to delays in getting medical tests and treatments. Build the wall, drain the swamp, lock her up, 70%. So what? Nancy Pelosi will get me to the front of the line anyway if I promise to bring my relatives here, 26%. That's an interesting poll. But you have to appreciate the innate wisdom of the American people in favor of universal health care by as much as 71 to 27, until they find out that it'll raise their taxes through the roof, end their access to private insurance and real Medicare, and dramatically delay their appointments in blood tests, MRIs, CT scans, x-rays, swallow tests, bone density exams, breathing tests, colonoscopies, dialysis, vaccinations, and whatever else they thought they could rely on. Because number one, everything comes with a price, and every compromise entails a trade-off. For example, ice cream tastes so much better when it has no calories, no fat, only vitamins and minerals, yet tastes exactly like the fully loaded stuff with exactly the same texture. Isn't that true? Well, no one knows, because they don't make healthy ice cream that tastes and feels exactly the same as rich, high-fat, high-sugar ice cream. Instead, you buy the ice cream without the fat, without the sugar, with or without that locust bean gum. And somehow, the texture is not exactly the same, and the taste is not identical. Maybe that's why people still buy the version that has saturated fats, high cholesterol, and all that sugar. It's the innate wisdom of the American people. So life comes with compromises and sacrifices. People with diabetes will sacrifice high sugar ice cream for greater life blessings. Lactase deficient consumers will buy the non-dairy frozen dessert made with the almond or soy milk. By the way, in case you didn't know, almonds and soybeans have no teats, which is why that is not really milk or cream, no matter what they call it on the label. Still, if they cannot digest lactose, they will buy the substitutes, ruining the day they had to give up the real stuff, but knowing that the payoff in digestive health is worth the trade. People with artery blockages will give up their high cholesterol saturated fats for fat-free alternatives, missing what they once had, but grateful for the opportunity to enjoy what lies ahead. Trade-offs. And that is what universal health care is really all about. It comes down to personal choices, cost-benefit balances, choices, trade-offs, and ice cream. You can't have it all, except for that national debt and an armed SWAT team arresting you at 3 in the morning if you know someone who voted for Trump. Yeah, that's a shout-out to the mule. There are tens of millions of interlopers here illegally, and there are millions others legally here who are completely able, healthy enough, and strong enough to work for a living, but who are unwilling to do so as long as you are willing to step in and cover their living expenses. So you have to ask yourself, do you feel lucky today? Is it important enough to you to provide universal coverage to all of them? To every person in this country, no matter how illegal, no matter how lazy, no matter what, as a Bill of Rights type guaranteed right. To the extent that you are willing to have your family, your loved ones, and you compromise your own lives and health care by having to wait longer to see a doctor, encountering longer delays in getting diagnostics and treatments, having to pay a Venezuelan boatload of more taxes, and losing your private insurance and your Medicare? Because if you're okay with giving all that up, a fair and balanced compromise, then you are qualified to virtue signal to Western Europe that you are as virtuous as they are. So who's going to pay for universal health care and Medicare for all? The hyphens? The rich? Or the usual suckers? Point two. Of course, their decades of Western European virtue now sees them rioting in yellow vests in the streets of Paris, Brexiting London out of the European Union, and watching other countries among them teeter in national bankruptcy. Pigs. Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain. You know, in high school history, we learned that these used to be the greatest powers in the world, you know, remember? As a result, they cannot even afford to pay the actual cost of defending themselves adequately. And that is why, as always, they turn to us, American capitalists, to pay their bills and defend them, even as they have imposed cheating tariffs against us for decades. The interesting question to ask is, once we undertake to become the next France and Germany and Greece and Denmark and Belgium, who's going to pay our defense bills? The hyphens? So let's talk about this one, 2A. Well, you know, the hyphens are socialists who know how to game the system to get rich, too. They're out there. Well, in addition to the hyphen, there's Brest-Litovsk, Serbia-Croatia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Minneapolis-St. Paul, Dallas-Fort Worth, Alsace-Lorraine, Austria-Hungary, Porfumo-Keeler, Haight-Ashbury, and of course Ocasio-Cortez herself, the hyphen. Most of those hyphens now are gone. The others have no bucks left except for the American cities that will be broke just like the Europeans once socialism reigns. That will leave Señorita Cortez, who will be the only richer one in the group, as she learns how to leverage socialism and political position in the swamp for fun and millions, as Bernie Sanders so cleverly has done. According to The Street, Uncle Red Boyne was worth $2 million 2 years ago. His wife, Jane O'Mara Sanders, is estimated to be worth between $1 million and $1.5 million. Shades of Stendhal's La Rouge et la Noire, the red and the black. The two reds, $4 million in the black. And don't expect the hyphen to pay. Gee, she would not even pay for her campaign staff's workers' comp coverage. Let's talk about 2B. It's not the billionaires who have figured out how to buy off Democrat polls to assure them their loopholes. Now, this is the truth that the fawning left mediocrity refused to share. Socialism is enormously expensive. As Margaret Thatcher precipitously observed, The problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. For the rich, the fabulously rich, the billionaires whose very life existence, the hyphen attacks as immoral, exorbitantly higher taxes spiraling out of control, are not a problem. There are truly brilliant tax attorneys and investment advisors who can conceptualize precisely how to circumnavigate any tax code. Billions can be moved offshore legally. Investments can be moved overseas. Gains can be liquidated later or converted. Cash deposited in the Cayman Islands, tax write-offs. The rich do not get bitten by tax increase. Notice that Wall Street and Silicon Valley now predominantly support the Democrats. Gates, Zuckerberg, Bezos, Steyer. The richer they are, the more aligned they tend to be with Democrats. Thus, the political censorship by Google, Twitter, and Facebook that targets conservatives. This is why I insert TrumpTown.com. All right, I'm not particularly crazy about the title TrumpTown.com, but what it is, it's a social media network for conservatives where you don't get thrown into the gulag because you violated some community standards from 4 years ago. This is how stupid it is. But anyways, check it out, TrumpTown.com. Now, it makes sense that the rich back the Dems. In the same way it makes sense why Democrats used to back a border wall as a religious sacrament, but now oppose it as immoral. See, initially, Democrats felt obliged to protect lower economic class blacks and Latinos. Therefore, they were determined to keep out illegals who were taking their constituents' jobs and driving down their salaries. Then one day, the Democrats figured out that they have the blacks and Latinos securely in their pockets anyway, as long as they keep selling identity politics. So no need to protect or advocate for them anymore. Instead, as California demonstrated, new vistas existed for transmogrifying the national electorate by importing millions more voters who would need welfare, food stamps, free education, free health care, and thus would vote Democratic to get it. You with me on this? You still with me? All right. Now, the rich grasp how the game works. Wall Street, Silicon Valley, the rich are economically smarter than others. That's how they got to be the rich. They know their billions are safe with the GOP in power. Lower taxes, less government interference with private enterprise. So to avoid stumbling into the same colossal catastrophe bungled by other demographic groups who have lost all political influence and condemned themselves to the economic underclass by putting all eggs in one basket, leaving them taken for granted, the rich give their millions to the Democrats to be sure that during the political cycles when the Dems are in power, the rich still will be protected with the necessary loopholes. They cover all their bases. Deplorables invested in both basketfuls. That is why Warren Buffett always will pay less in taxes than does his secretary. And the likes of Hillary always will be paid huge honoraria like the $675,000 that Goldman Sachs passed along to her for three closed-door schmoozes. Eggs in all baskets. No matter who reigns, the money reigns. They ain't gonna pay for universal coverage, so that leaves us at sea. Guess who's paying? So who will pay for socialized medicine? Single-payer universal health care? A national Medicare for all? Certainly not the poor. The unemployed, who by definition benefit from one-way income distributions towards which they do not and cannot contribute. And that leaves the suckers in the middle class. That's you and me. The suckers who tell pollsters that they support universal health care, free college education for all, free this for all, free that for all. It is the middle class suckers who fail to understand that there is no such thing as a free lunch, that everything costs money, and that socialism is more expensive than Armani outfits on the couture floor at Neiman Marcus. The middle class will pay, and to some degree, it is just because they wield the balance of power at election time. If they do not wise up soon, the middle class will end up giving free health care to everyone, exactly as California now proposes to do even for illegals. And they will wake up one morning with a tax bill so onerous that many will decide that it no longer pays for them to work either, when they instead can stay home too and get it for free like everyone else. Venezuela wasn't built in a day. The remaining middle-class suckers who comprise the working class will get hit with headaches and nausea so intense, but they'll have to wait 6 months for their next free medical appointments with no alternatives for affordable private care. As Professor Grant Nelson once said, you can't squeeze blood out of a turnip, to which one might add, keep the change. Well, what do you think? This is what Kamala Harris is spouting about. This is what she's talking about. This is what she means. Do you want to talk about this? We are. We're going to hit it. Also from the American Spectator, special report, George Neumayer. He entitles it, The Dems Made Their Choice. Posted at midnight tonight, February 1st, 12:01 a.m. The Democrats have been on the path to infanticide for years, a path paved by the logic of their own position, which is that the child possesses no right to life independent of the will of the mother. Is there really any moral difference between her choosing partial birth abortion and choosing infanticide to complete it? Virginia Governor Ralph Northam simply blurted out the position Planned Parenthood has long counseled Democrats to take. Indeed, his spinning in the aftermath of the furor over his remarks simply confirms that the Democrats believe that a right to partial birth abortion should extend to the consequences of a failed one, which would inevitably require an act of infanticide. If you don't know what partial birth abortion is, I'll tell you right now, it's, to me, it's sickening. It's murder. If you don't know, you need to look it up. I'm not going to do it for you. I can't and I won't. I did it before and it got me, it changed my mind completely. Northam has been reduced to saying in effect that there is good and bad infanticide. If you don't know what that is, that's the killing of an infant. Murder of an infant. And that he wants it confined to a limited number of cases. In other words, he wants infanticide safe, legal, and rare. Are you smoking dope? No woman seeks a third trimester abortion except in the case of tragic or difficult circumstances such as a non-viable pregnancy or in the event of severe fetal abnormalities. And the governor's comments were limited to the actions physicians would take in the event that a woman in those circumstances went into labor, said his spokesman. Of course, Democrats put the broadest possible definition on health in the hopes that the right to partial birth abortion is no more restricted than the right to first-term ones. They have always favored an unlimited right to abortion, seeing it as a moral good and a form of eugenics. Out of the philosophy of rights was bound to come an acceptance of infanticide as one of the consequences implicit in the completion of a partial birth abortion. Andrew Cuomo's zeal for abortion, seen in his lighting up the World Trade Center to celebrate the passage of the most extreme abortion law in the country, represents the true feelings of the party. It is the party of Planned Parenthood to its core, full of radical feminists who want abortion safe, legal, and often. For years, abortion advocates have been urging Democrats to portray abortion not as a cause for tears, but as a positive source of liberation. Oh, never mind. Abortion advocate Martha Stahl once said to the press that we see women express relief more than anything else that they have the freedom to choose. Planned Parenthood has urged women to take pride in their abortions, and for a while it was even selling I Had an Abortion t-shirts. Planned Parenthood's long-term strategy has been to normalize abortion at any stage and make it so trivial that no one would think to question it. Alexander Sanger, the grandson of Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger, scolded Democrats for even flirting with the safe, legal, and rare mantra. He argued for the unapologetic celebration of abortion and even cast the unborn child as an interloper who deserves to die. The unborn child is not just an innocent life, he wrote, but a liability, a threat, and a danger to the mother and to other members of the family. Wow, you want to talk about Nazis. Damn. Abortion advocates set up websites like imnotsorry.net to further Sanger's version so that women could post testimonials expressing their relief and joy after an abortion. The founders of that website explained that it was created for the purpose of showing women that exercising their legal right to terminate their pregnancy is not the blood-splattered guilt trip so many make it out to be. Well, of course, you're not on the receiving end of it, you freaking idiots. Of that movement came a president, Barack Obama, who had supported partial birth abortion as an Illinois legislator and then later a Democratic presidential nominee. Hillary Clinton, who also straightforwardly defended partial birth abortion as a tool of eugenics against the disabled. Northam is hardly staking out a new position. The party had reconciled itself to partial birth abortion and its implications a long time ago. Its latest blast of extremism is simply due to its fear of the consequences of a growing Trump judiciary. The Democrats are frantically working across the country to cement the culture of abortion in place, dreading the loss of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who, in my opinion, should have been dead a long time ago, who is famous for justifying abortion on the grounds that it eliminates certain populations that we don't want to have too many of. From such comments to Northam's is a short distance. If he holds any distinction among the Democrats, it is he gave voice to the final choice inherent in a culture that sanctions partial birth abortion. Like I said, I have read up on it. I've seen the picture. You know what? Remember that abortionist Gosel? Kermit Gosel, that was his name. If partial birth abortion were legal, he would not be in prison today. He's in prison because he committed infanticide. Quickly, all right, look, I'm going to save you the time. Partial birth abortion. The baby is born, everything but the head. They take a pair of scissors and they stick it at the base of the skull and they cut the spinal cord. And then they birth the rest of the child, which is just his head only. That's partial birth abortion. That's infanticide. It's pathetic. Look, it's one thing if the mother's life's in danger. I understand that. And don't sit there and say, well, they don't do it all the time. Really? Go tell that to Gosnell. He's the one that's sitting in prison. Crap really irks me. Just irks me to no end. Oh, my. What time is it? How much time have I got? I have some time. And it's time for our usual fun stuff. It's time for our social justice update, courtesy of Breitbart. Yes, it's time for our social justice update right here on the Jeffers Brief. Where do we start? There's so much from these lunatics. Ellen Page blames Pence and Trump for quote-unquote hate that led to the Smollett attack. This needs to effing stop, she says. You want to talk about that supposed attack in Chicago? You know what? He's not cooperating with authorities. They asked to see his cell phone. They want to see his call log for the time period. And guess what? He's not releasing it. I'm telling you now, this whole thing's a hoax. It didn't happen. Mega country in downtown Chicago at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. Who are you kidding me? Oh, and then we got the brain scientist Roger Waters urges Super Bowl performers to take a knee for American hero Kaepernick. Yeah, you know what? He's an American moron. He's everything that you as an American athlete don't want to do. Idiot. University of Michigan professor has been arrested for sexual assault. Many universities allow sexual relationships between professors and students. A recently released report suggests that many American universities allow for sexual relationships between students and professors. Well, then it should just work its way down the line. They're going to, before you know it, the libs are already taking over the high school, so we'll be able to slip that little in there, make sure that, we'll allow for, sexual relationships between high school students and their teachers. And they'll become junior high. Where does it stop? Where does it end? Reason Magazine reports that homeschool children are more tolerant than public school students. A recent column in Reason Magazine argues that homeschool students are smarter and more tolerant than their publicly educated peers. Could be. In the meantime, the University of Florida has launched a diversity podcast, but no one is listening. The University of Florida's diversity officer recently launched a new podcast, but no one on campus is listening. The podcast has gained just 100 downloads across its first 3 episodes. Yeah, sounds like a success there. What else do we have that's worthwhile? Rob Lowe slams idiotic college that banned Pledge of Allegiance over connection to white nationalism. Celebrity actor Rob Lowe spoke out against the Santa Barbara City College Wednesday following a decision from the Board of Trustees to remove the Pledge of Allegiance from their meetings. By the way, the Board of Trustees has rescinded that decision and is going back to it. You know what? I'm so sick and tired of hearing about white nationalism, white privilege. White privilege, what the hell is that? I had to work for everything I had. It wasn't given to me. As a matter of fact, I probably should have had some job, a couple jobs I should have had because I was qualified for it, but instead, because I was the wrong color, I got burned, and there was nothing I could do about it. Because the department in question was under a Department of Justice mandate. They had to hire X amount of whites, X amount of blacks, X amount of Latinos, X amount of men, X amount of women, regardless of how they turned out on their test results. Whether they were qualified or not didn't matter. They had to hire them. Art Gallery Brute's pro-life students saying, "You are pro-death." A pro-abortion employee kicked pro-life students out of an art gallery on Saturday in San Francisco, California, shouting, "You are pro-death," before closing the door on them. That's so stupid, I can't even stand it. The IUPUI, the Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis, is hosting a white racial literacy project aimed at making white students aware that they have racist thoughts and unknowingly commit racist acts. Events are racially segregated, in which speakers are expected to help white students understand how they can change. That is more stupid than the other one. And I can't stand that one either. Jussie Smollett. Kevin Hart's attacked for telling actor Jussie Smollett to stand strong after an alleged attack. Leftist attacked Kevin Hart for wishing actor Jussie Smollett well after news broke that he was the target of a homophobic attack in Chicago. I'm calling it radishes. I'm thinking it's a hoax. I don't think it happened at all. I think he's just looking to be more relevant. What else do we have here? Radical. Red Fred movement rallies Virginia teachers' higher pay demand. The rally is the latest Red for Ed action in a series of events ranging from the teacher walkouts in West Virginia, Arizona, and Oklahoma to the recently concluded LA teacher strike, said the National Education Association, the nation's largest teachers union, in its media outlet, NEA Today. By the way, because it is the largest teachers union, they should be paying union taxes, but I don't believe they are. All right, that's it for me. Have a good one.